Welcome to Sermons from First Presbyterian Church, Palo Alto. Each week, we share a recording of the Sunday sermon, offering theologically progressive, social justice-oriented reflections grounded in Scripture and what's happening in our lives and in the world. Most weeks, the sermon is preached by our pastor, the Reverend Tom Harris, and from time to time, we're joined by guest preachers. The following sermon is from the 10 a.m. service on Easter Sunday, April 5th, 2026. Reverend Harris reflects on the way Mary Magdalene shows us the way to what Nikki Giovanni calls a natural revolution. In so many ways, on that Easter morning, she showed us what it means to be human, humane, and natural. It is this way of acting in the world that leads us to resurrection in so many different ways.
So I found the following poem when I was looking for poems for last Sunday's Poem Sunday, and I decided to save this one for today. It's by Nikki Giovanni, and it's called Revolutionary Dreams. I used to dream militant dreams of taking over America to show these white folks how it is to be done. I used to dream radical dreams of blowing everyone away with my perceptive powers of correct analysis. I even used to think I'd be the one to stop the riot and negotiate the peace. Then I awoke and dug that if I dreamed natural dreams of being a natural woman, doing what a woman does when she's natural, I would have a revolution. Now, I confess I don't know exactly what Nikki Giovanni means by being a natural woman, doing what a woman does when she's natural. That can probably mean a lot of different things. But I feel that Mary Magdalene in our story this morning is showing us what it is to be natural, and therefore following Nikki Giovanni, showing us the path to revolution. For instance, Mary is being natural when she, driven by loyalty and devotion for her beloved teacher, is one of just a few disciples who, according to John's gospel, stayed by Jesus during the crucifixion and up to the moment of his death. Even as other disciples fled in fear and denied him, her love and devotion and loyalty kept her by his side. For her, that was just natural. And she was being natural when, compelled by her grief, she was the first one to arrive at the tomb that Sunday morning. We get a whole story about Peter and the beloved disciple racing to the tomb and who gets there first and what each one does when they get there. But in fact, when it comes to who was there first, they were competing for the silver and the bronze. Mary was just following her heart that morning and acting out her grief naturally. Mary was acting naturally when she expressed her grief and her sorrow and perhaps her anger at the disappearance of Jesus' body, expressing that by weeping and then by challenging anyone she could find. The male disciples arrived, gathered information, and left. Mary stayed by the tomb to weep and to advocate. And we might think that talking to angels, as Mary does in our story, is not such a natural thing to do. But during our most despairing moments, even the most skeptical of us will cry out in prayer. And is that so different than talking to angels? Sometimes prayer just happens naturally. She was being natural when, thinking Jesus was the gardener, she pleaded, "Tell me where you have put him, and I will go get him." She would not stand for the desecration of his memory or his body. And it was very natural when she had watched, after she had watched Jesus die on the cross a few days earlier, to fail to recognize him standing in front of her until he said her name. Dale Carnegie once said, "Remember, a person's name is to that person the sweetest and most important sound in any language." Our names are the first words that we learn. Our names are lovingly repeated to us as infants. Our names are sung to us on our birthdays. Our names are pronounced over loudspeakers at great moments in our life. Our names are spoken at our wedding vows. And even those who change their names later in life for any number of reasons do so because they are seeking to express their full humanity. They are inviting us to love them by naming them in a way that feels natural to them. Our names are integral to how we are loved and to our humanity. Being called by our names and calling those we love by theirs is all very natural. Once Mary recognizes Jesus, he has some peculiar things to say. Now, we substituted nurturing one for father to make it a gender-neutral reference to God. And so using that, Jesus says, "Don't hold on to me. I haven't yet gone up to my nurturing one. Go to my siblings and tell them I'm going up to my nurturing one and yours to my God and yours." Now think for a moment about what those last words meant for Mary. My God and yours. Jesus, as Mary's beloved teacher, who she revered and had dedicated her life to, is telling her that her relationship to God is just like his. His God is hers, his heavenly parent is hers, his creator is hers. And he also said those words about, I am going up to, or in some translations, I am ascending. Now, most of us today don't believe that Jesus literally floated up into the sky and into space and past the moon. So maybe a better word for modern times would be, I am transforming. Or on Easter, I am resurrecting. But in addition to the meaning, the tense of that verb is very important. The tense of the verb in the Greek is present, indicative, active. Any grammar people out there, did you just get chills, right? Present, indicative, active tense is used to communicate something that is imminently about to happen or something that is in the process of happening right now. Now, the more traditional way to read this would be imminent sense. So Jesus is just about to ascend or transform or resurrect. But I like to read this as more being in the process of. He is saying, don't hold on to me because I am in the process of resurrecting. Resurrection is not just one and done for Jesus, and it's not just one and done for us. It is something that happens to us over time. New life emerges over time. We are raised from death gradually in a thousand different ways. The short documentary, Stranger at the Gate, illustrates all this beautifully. In this film, we meet a group of Muslims in Muncie, Indiana. They moved there in the 80s as refugees from Afghanistan, and we meet the matriarch of the community, whose name is Bibi Bahrami. And we meet her husband, we meet others in the Muslim community there. And we meet in the film an ex-Marine named Richard McKinney, or Mac. Mac served in Iraq and Afghanistan, where he was trained that Muslims were the enemy. He was told that if he had trouble shooting Muslims, to just imagine himself on the shooting range, shooting at paper targets. So that's what he did. He imagined the Muslims as paper targets, and he killed them. And he came home to Muncie with PTSD. At home, he finds this Muslim community living in his hometown, walking around town, in stores, in schools. The very people he had been taught were the enemy and were dangerous and were killers were everywhere. Having been taught that Muslims were the enemy and still fighting the war in his mind, he develops a plan to bomb the local mosque, where Bibi Bahrami and her family are the leaders. But as a result of a conversation with his little daughter, who, without knowing his plan, asked him a question about a Muslim woman she saw in her school and why that woman was wearing a burqa, Mac decides that he better go to the mosque and meet the people there first before he kills them. He felt that if he went there, he would be able to prove to anyone who challenged him, including his daughter, that these were killers and that his plan was justified. When he arrives at the mosque, the people there could see immediately that he was troubled. Just as they walked through the door, they could see that he was agitated, that something was off, that he was struggling with something. But they welcomed him anyway. In fact, they treated him as an honored guest. They hugged him. They listened to him. They fed him. The matriarch Bibi says, "I comforted him. I gave him attention. I personally believe that we need to be kind to those people even more, people who might have some difficulty or some concern or some stress. I personally believe we need to be more kind to those than people who are successful." As a result of their kindness and their gracious welcome that did not fit what he had been taught in the military, Mac kept coming back to the mosque. He attended meals, he attended prayers, people got to know him and he got to know them. In Mac's words, he says, "The more time I spent around them, the more I started to change. And one day I had a dream that I was on the range and I had shot a paper target. Instead of a hole in the target started to bleed. And that's when I felt things were about to change." He says, "It took 8 weeks to change my mind. It took 8 weeks to remove all that hatred, all that planning, all that everything out of my heart." And then in the big twist of the end of the film, Richard McKinney converts to Islam. True story. Later, the FBI somehow found out what he was planning, and they searched his house. They didn't find anything, and they determined he was no threat. But as a result of that investigation, the people at the mosque found out that he had been planning to kill them. That was the first time they'd found out. When Bibi found out that he was planning to kill them, her response was to invite him over for dinner. She said, "I asked him, 'What in the world were you thinking, Richard?' And he said he didn't know anything better. He said, 'Sister Bibi, if I had met you and all the others like you that had so much understanding, I never could have even thought about doing it.' He said, 'You showed me the right way. You showed me what true humanity is about. Put Islam aside, you showed me what true humanity is about.' Because of Bibi and others in the community acting out their values of love and kindness and welcome and putting those values into practice, Richard McKinney was in the process of rising from the dead. He was in the process of resurrecting. Bibi Barami could easily say, along with Nikki Giovanni, "And then I awoke and dreamed that if I dream natural dreams of being a natural woman, doing what a woman does when she's natural, I would have a revolution." I think these days we may all be dreaming militant dreams. We may all be wishing we could do more to fix the world, wishing we could be more powerful, more influential, more in control. As we watch white supremacy in this nation unveiled for all the world to see, as we witness Christian fundamentalism and nationalism partner with the super wealthy with terrifying effectiveness, as we see those people, those same people, attempt to disempower women from the voting booth to the doctor's offices, as we see them roll back equality and protection for our queer family, we may all be dreaming militant dreams. Let's fix this thing by force if we have to. Or we think that we can just fix it by thinking about it, discussing it, coming up with the correct analysis. But believing that we can think something into reality, isn't that more supernatural than natural? So if we want a new world, if we want a world raised from death, if we want a revolution, we have to act that world into being. We have to act not like God, but like humans. We have to act humanly and humanely and naturally. A new world, a world raised from the dead, requires us, like Mary Magdalene, to be the most human and humane and natural we can be, like risking our own safety to stand with those who are being crucified, whether the crucifixion is happening at an ICE arrest or in a US concentration camp or among the rubble of Gaza. A world risen from death requires us, like Mary Magdalene, to do the most human and humane and natural things, like honoring those who have been unjustly killed, whether that takes the form of showing up at their tombs or going to their vigils on local street corners or weeping over their loss or fiercely defending their memories from desecration. A world risen from dead requires us, like Mary Magdalene, to do the most human and humane and natural things, like talking to angels and perhaps demanding justice from God. A world risen from death requires us, like Mary Magdalene, to do the most human and humane and natural things, like talking to gardeners and being surprised when they are more than we assume them to be. A world risen from death requires us, like Mary Magdalene, to do the most human and humane and natural things, like listening for our names being called and calling others by theirs. Certainly, we can dream of a better world. We can wish that world were here now, but our thinking and our dreaming won't make it real. We have to stop trying to be supernatural by thinking a new world into existence and just start acting human and humane and natural by standing with those who suffer, by grieving our losses, by honoring the memories of those who have been killed, by talking to angels and gardeners, by listening for our names being called and calling others by theirs. And if we do those most humane and human things every day, as often as we can, we won't have a perfect world, but it will be more natural, and we will have our revolution. Amen.
Thanks for listening to sermons from First Presbyterian Church, Palo Alto, located at 1140 Cowper Street in Palo Alto, California. If you'd like to worship with us, we gather Sundays at 10 a.m., both in person and online. And you can find more information about our congregation, worship, and ministries at